Hi, I'm Mel Pickup, Chief Executive of Bradford Teaching Hospitals, and welcome to this month's episode of our podcast series, where I'm sitting down with colleagues and partners from across the Trust and the wider community to find out more about them and their contributions to the health and well-being of the people here in Bradford. In today's episode, we're focusing on the recently published 10-year health plan for England, Fit for the Future, a roadmap that outlines how we build a faster, simpler, fairer NHS over the next decade. With me to explore how we're already making those ambitions a reality is someone at the forefront of change in our physiotherapy service. Matt Walmsley is an advanced practice physiotherapist who has worked across the NHS, elite sport and private practice. He's had a particular interest in upper limb injuries and is passionate about innovation, education, and patient-centred care. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
So, let's kick off. Before we talk about the 10-year plan, let's learn a little bit more about your journey. How did you end up working in physiotherapy, and what's kept you here at Bradford for the past 20 years?
I grew up local. I'm from Little Horton over at BD5.
Yeah.
I decided I wanted to pursue a career in physiotherapy around the age of 15. I was lucky enough to procure a work experience place over at St Luke's. Went into the department, loved it from word go. And from that point onwards, that was my mission, to become a physio.
That's fantastic. And you've got quite a few strings to your bow outside the NHS as well, including being a bit of a social media influencer. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Influencer might be pushing the envelope a bit, but it's something I'm very passionate about. So across the spectrum of where I work, education at the forefront. And there's a bit of a black hole out there. And you can see that when you're visiting people in different trusts. There's not a sort of continuum throughout the country about where this level of education should be pegged and who should be delivering it. So about 18 months ago, we formed a company based on educational needs called Simply MSK that I'm the commercial director of, and we've been going from strength to strength where we try and deliver these courses up and down the country, and we're trying to get that standardized practice out there. And about 15 months ago, I took the plunge to set up an Instagram account, and I was expecting around about 100 to 500 followers maybe over a year, and it ballooned, and it's gone from strength to strength, and I'm really proud of it and pleased with what it does. And it's a really good vehicle to push out those good positive vibes and show people what we're doing and showcase Bradford.
Great. So before we dive into some of the changes that you've been making more recently, can you paint a picture of the unique challenges, I guess, that apply to your profession in this organisation? And I guess, you know, it would be remiss of me not to talk about how long patients have to wait right now following a couple of years of the pandemic for treatments.
Absolutely. So this is coming from a point of me being in this trust for 20 years and being able to see a bigger picture over a longer period of time. So we know what our waiting list has always been and what that's hovered around. And it's had fluctuation at the time, but never have we faced a challenge like this before. And it got to a point where our waiting list was nearly a year. And I think previous to that, the worst it's been in my knowledge was 12 weeks. So you can see the impact there is going to be huge. And a lot of the things that we're dealing with can go on to develop chronicity and things that are maybe secondary problems that if you'd dealt with the first one first and got that sorted in a timely manner, you'd never got the secondary and the tertiary impact that that would then bring.
Yeah.
So this brings other pressures to the NHS, and we've got to then think about what's our role in this and how do we solve it? So we have these biannual meetings within the team. It came up that we had this problem, this year wait that we needed to fix, and it's, well, how do you invent more appointments? How do we, because we're very labor intensive in physio, it's all basically the money is in the hands of the physios, there's no equipment really other than the TheraBand. So if we haven't got any more staff, how do we get them more appointments? There's different subsections of patients. So patients that would want to engage straight away and they would want to sit with you through the course of the treatment. But there's also patients that don't need that or require that, and they're quite busy in their day-to-day lives and they'll want that takeaway. Can I get a quick fix? Can we get a sheet of exercises or something that'll help me go away and I'll continue my journey myself?
Yeah.
Or are the ones that need what the 10-year plan says and they want to be in the community, they want to be doing things local to the house. So we then looked at that and thought, well, are we serving the community the best way we can? If everyone's getting a one-to-one face-to-face appointment, it's kind of one size fits all. Whether someone's got communication difficulties, learning difficulties, whether they've got other issues, we're not really bespoking it for that person. We started off piloting, me and Mario Nazir in my team, and we put together a pilot where we sent out en masse a group of patients, more than we'd ever do, and said, look, we're going to do an education session here, but you'll also get assessed at the same time. So when we got those patients in, They were given the tools to cope with their problem when we'd assessed them. That then went on for 6 weeks, and they had the option to then get that one-to-one. So that still wasn't taken off the table. They could still have that. But they had things to be going on with whilst they're on that waiting list. So we'd started the clock going earlier. And by having that input, the people who then dropped out, fell away, or had completed their journey, they'd done that before they got to the one-to-one appointment. So we were left with that subsection that wanted to engage at an earlier point. And that then meant that we were getting through the waiting list quicker and more effectively for the patient and for the trust. So I went back to the team and we had that shared goal meeting. And I said, look, I've seen some numbers here and it's small numbers compared to what we've got as a group. But if these are the right percentages and we apply this to our big demographic of back pain, which is our main thing, we could do something quite special. We could reduce the wait for the patient, which is the main thing. That's the main target, to get them to see the right person at the right time and GERFT. But we could also help ourselves. And that then opens the doors to be able to get to the people that are needed, the ones who need the one-to-one.
Yeah.
And it happened and it worked. And strangely enough, the percentage we'd seen on the lower numbers, so I think I'd looked at 300, a sample of 300 with shoulders, that applied to the same when it was 600 or even more with the lower backs. It was almost identical percentages. Then we've tried to then almost strip this back and look at this as a wider thing. Would this be more appropriate in a multitude of settings, not just physio? Is this okay for dietetics, for cardiology? Would this work in an adult outpatient setting? So we've tried to do that as well and look at the bigger picture.
Right. That's fantastic. One of the biggest criticisms patients have, aside from the length of time they have to wait, is the fact that there is this sort of radio silence from us. Someone makes a referral, and then there's nothing until you're able to see them. So that ability to reach out and touch them, they may not get what they anticipated being that one-on-one session, but they get something, and something is better than nothing for the whole of the time that they're waiting. And then, like you say, you can sort and sift the patients and target your interventions, which is, you know, a finite level of expertise and capacity, to those that really need it and wouldn't benefit from anything else.
That's, you've hit the nail square on the head, because we had a meeting about maybe 18 months ago and I raised this exact point. So this tied in with the time when the innovation team had looked at other people coming into the trust and pitching their innovations, ideas that we could use as a trust. And I work closely with Mr. Gandhi, who's in orthopedics, and he sits on that team. And he just put a couple of people together and he says, there's Dr. Doctor out there that's a digital triage service. Are you aware of it? And we looked at it together and it really suited what we do down to the ground. Now, my colleague, Janet Wakefield, picked that up and she's done an absolutely amazing job at bespoking that digital triage pathway by adding in subsections of almost like a safety net for patients. So if you answer so many questions correctly, you then get put into a certain pile. But if you answer some that maybe raise a red flag, you need to go to this person or to A&E or to your GP, and this then raises that level earlier.
Yeah.
And that's at day zero.
Yeah.
So then they know that we've received that referral, but also we're understanding their needs more. They're being screened earlier, and it's making the whole journey smoother. So we're ticking a few boxes here with digital. We're making it smoother, it's quicker access, and it ties in so well with the innovation of the weight well, and it's almost like a jigsaw piece being clicked together.
Yeah, and you're quite right, because, you know, that number one priority from the 10-year plan, analog to digital, is all about that. And I understand, as part of that offer, then we've also created some videos to enable patients to do some exercises themselves at home with that extra guidance. It's great going away with a sheet of paper that kind of give you a drawing of what you should be doing. There's nothing better than, a face-to-face, but the next best thing is a video that tells you exactly what you do. And people are so used to that now, aren't they? You know, my go-to place for things that I don't know how to do is YouTube oftentimes.
Yeah.
And not a set of instructions about something.
And this is what, so the wider team that came up with this is myself and Claire Wingate and Lisa Capewell, and we really pride ourselves on this initiative of looking at the feedback of what we've got for patients from those experiences. So where have you got that information from? Which YouTube site have you looked at? And we've watched them together and gone, oh, you know, maybe not. And then we've even had things that have been handed down from either the innovation team to look at as a like a rehab tool. And we've agreed with some things, not the others. So we did decide to come up with our own bespoke video. And we've done that on my side first because it's a smaller number and it's good to get that sample feedback before we go out to the big population. And we've had live feedback, so we've done feedback in qualitative and quantitative formats through a forms thing online. And from that, we've then managed to redevelop that. So we've not just stood still, we've gone, well, that could do with changing, this needs to be augmented. So the next role then is for Claire and Lisa to do that again in the lower back section from the spinal point of view, and that then frees us up. So we originally had saved all this extra time while we were doing the talk one-to-one, say I was stood in front of 30 people at a time delivering it. And then we sat back and said, well, how do we save even more time? And that's when we'd recorded the actual talk again.
Yeah.
And then whilst we were delivering that to 15, we were assessing the other 15 and then we flipped them around. So that's where we're at the minute. So it's a continual development of this process, really.
Yeah, great. So tell me about what you've been doing in moving care out of the traditional hospital setting to patients' home or an outside environment.
So we've worked on this in almost like a three-pronged approach. So once we've seen the patients and we're comfortable that they are on a pathway, we can then put them straight into a strength and conditioning group or a frozen shoulder group or something that'd be still hands-on, but more tailored to their needs. And then we can then signpost them to the community with BEEP referrals, which is Bradford Encouraging Exercising Patients, to maybe the social prescribers that are out there. And we work closely with our FCPs, which are first contact practitioners. So we deliver some of those as physiotherapists in the community. And we're very fortunate that they actually have one session a week where they work in our department with us as well. So we can like liaise and say, right, we've dealt with this person. We think they might need something in your PCN. Could you direct us to where we need to send them? And it's a lot more joined up thinking.
The connectedness with the community is a really important facet, I think, of what we should be thinking about in relation to the future of hospitals, not just this hospital, because my own personal philosophy is that we should be more than just a repair centre. And in order to do that, we've got to work much more closely with communities, empowering communities and the various assets that exist in communities. And that might be the cricket club, the football club, it might be the local gyms, the swimming pools, the voluntary sector, the VCSE sector. All of these people have a fantastically important part to play in keeping our people of Bradford District and Craven healthy, happy and at home. That's our kind of overarching ambition. Can you tell me a little bit more then about how you see your role in prevention?
Oh, that's the big thing. I think physio has always been the prevention rather than the cure, because if you get someone earlier, you prevent people developing secondary and tertiary problems based on that first problem. People were arriving at their first appointment saying, well, I were referred with this problem with my back.
But now I've got this one as well.
And my neck's bad, or my arm's bad, and my leg's bad. And it became hard for us as a practitioner as well as the patient, and you could see it frustration from both sides. And that is where this was really born out of. If we can make them wait well, and wait better, we prevent that from becoming a secondary problem. And that's when that becomes good value for the NHS.
Yeah.
Excellent service for the patient, because let's face it, that's the first point of call, that the patient needs to be assessed at a timely manner. And then it makes the flow of the hospital move much quicker.
That's great. And not everyone is digitally enabled, are they?
No.
And we've got a particular geography that's sometimes quite challenging for people to stay connected just from the point of view of a good signal and good broadband, you know, which isn't something that other geographies necessarily have to experience. If you think about the size of our patch, there are some fairly remote areas. So digital is great, but it's not for everybody. How are you addressing some of the challenges of sort of digital exclusion, as we might term it?
I think we've tried to give a mixed offering so that we can then let the individual decide. But the thing that I'd say about digital is it's a word that's used probably, not incorrectly, but as a bit of an umbrella term. And everyone thinks AI, the sexy new things that are coming out, how are we going to use this new technology? We're not using the old digital technology very well, like the videos, like the text messaging.
Yeah.
And the stuff that are much more like secure in people's lives now. So yes, people might not have a good broadband signal, or they might not have the best ability to do a FaceTime chat, but they probably will have signal for a text message. So one of the things we brought in not that long ago is a reminder service for the physiotherapy department. You've got an appointment via text, and that's reduced our non-attenders by a massive amount. And it's these small changes that you can't see for plain sight because they're hidden.
Yeah.
And that's where the video came in. And I think my advice to anyone who's thinking about doing something like this or trying to change a pathway would be, don't look at it from the top down at the big thing. Try and look at the baseline of what you're doing well, and then look at what you're not doing well. But small incremental changes lead to a bigger one at the top.
And like you said, Matt, we all think of physiotherapy as a hands-on thing. If this modality works in physiotherapy, then it can work in so many other applications and specialties, can't it?
This is it. So it's got to be, each area's got to look at how you could flex this model, because it's putting the power in the patient's hands, and they can pick and choose what their offering is and what they can do with that. But what we've tried to do is the flow of the actual day has been broken down so that it can be reproduced in other areas. And it's been able to flex the ability to say, this group of people want to come in and say, I'll have that chat, I'll get a few exercises, I'm going to go away and see what I need to do. But then there's the other people that might have a bit more need, and they'll say, well, actually, that's good, but I'd like to just have that one-to-one. And it works both ways. So I think rolling it out in other areas, they'd have to start with how their throughput process works and see if they could reverse engineer it to fit. But it would really work in multiple areas across the patch.
Yeah. And all that enables one of the big aspirations in the plan, I guess, which is care closer to home, to become a reality. So while it may not be your main focus, you mentioned about the first contact practitioner. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that role is?
Yeah, sure. So it can be run by either a physio, paramedics sometimes will take the mantle, nurses, pharmacists. And the idea is I think it's called navigation on system one. So the system picks up when the person goes into the receptionist and will ask some questions about what the condition is. And if it's not a medical concern that a GP doesn't need to then actually deal with, it can be farmed to the relevant professional. So a medication query might go to a pharmacist, FCP, same day usually, maybe the day after, but they'd be seen on the day by that practitioner.
And would that be in the community setting?
Yeah, it would be in the GP practice that they'd be there. So they do them in PCNs, so that each PCN should have one, maybe two first contact practitioners. So it might be that you're linked with someone local, but it's not quite your practice, but you could get there by usually walking or a short car ride.
You've shared with us some fantastic innovation and the transformative way that you're applying that to your services and that of others. It sounds fantastic. What do the patients say about it?
Back in 19th of November 24, is the first inaugural back education day, and we had 600 people invited. And then of that subsection that came, we asked them all to fill in a live questionnaire as they were coming in. So we saw them in groups of 30. Educated them. They then went off and got assessed by a one-to-one physiotherapist, again in a shortened assessment. And then they got either moved into an emergency pathway if they needed seen sooner. And then the other side of things, then they'd come back round and then they get given some bespoke exercises for whatever the physio had found in groups and given 6 weeks to go away and work on it. But what we'd done then is we captured that feedback at the end to say, well, how it was an 8-step questionnaire that was more like statement based. So it was qualitative. It was things like, I'd recommend this to a friend. I'd come back if it was offered again. And of those 8 questions, everything got 8.2 out of 10 or more. 8.2 was the worst score. And I think percentage wise, off the top of my head, it was about a 66% return of feedback forms from the turnout.
Yeah,
so
good.
Complete transparency.
Yeah.
We've then gone on further and asked more verbal feedback, written feedback, and it's been a real success. Everyone's been really, really championing it. Obviously, with everything, you get some negative feedback, but what we've done with that is we've tried to be constructive with it and go back and see how we can tweak it. So what did originally take about 27, maybe 30 practitioners to deliver in a day is now, because we've got a smaller waiting list, is being done by 6 people on a monthly basis. And on my team, we do it with 2 to 3 because I've got smaller numbers. So it's now embedded in the normal practice.
Yeah. And patients aren't having to wait.
Exactly. And that's a big positive. So that's what we get now regularly. And we're just beginning to tail off that now, where people are coming in and because they've got the doctor through, then an invite, then they've turned up. It might have been 3 weeks that they've waited, but they don't feel they've waited because they've had input all the way through that point.
Yeah.
So it's been positive throughout,
And it's almost like you're creating a contract with the patient to be a part of their solution, really, isn't it?
Compliance is huge, because we've battled with this throughout my whole career, really, because if you do manipulate someone's back, for example, or you mobilize someone, that's a temporary fix. Unless you're going away and doing something to top that up, it's not going to change forever. So we're trying to give you those tools. And by changing the mantra or the playing field and saying this to the patient, you know, this is a combined effort, it sort of taps into the patient more, and the ones who are engaged get the outcome they want, really, and they can see that, and it is that engagement.
So you've clearly made huge progress, but what's next?
Well, there's lots on the agenda. So we wanted to give back to charity or do something charitable. So my colleagues, Lisa Capewell and Clara Wingate, have mentioned before, we've set up this 24-hour dash, which is, I think it's September, where we're going to keep, I think it's a treadmill, bike and a cross trainer going for 24 hours in the foyer. So if anyone wants to donate, there's a Just Giving website that you can get involved with. And that's going to be going back to the hospital's charities. It's mainly looking at how we improve what we're already doing. So making that waiting list remain low, looking at patient satisfaction scores, how do we move into these things with a 10-year plan further, not just stop and be static at what we are. But I think we've got to do it as a team, because what we've found this year is this isn't just one person's work. This is the work of about 50 people. I'm just lucky enough to be here to be explaining it to you. And if you all have a solid goal and a focus of the direction of what you're going, you pull together and you get there a lot quicker.
And it's really good role modelling for other specialties and other functions that equally are struggling to provide the timely care that we would all wish to. Due to increasing demands and some of the legacies of the last couple of years. How do you and your team stay motivated then? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
We've got a brilliant team. The best team we've had in years. A fantastic mix of everything. And everyone just makes everyone tick at the minute. We are generally a motivated team, but I've got an absolutely amazing team that I'm a part of. And it's not just, like I say, one person's work. So any ideas, whether it be from any level, any banding, we take seriously and we try and bring it together and escalate up the chain.
And what advice would you give your 15-year-old self now?
Do exactly the same as what you've done.
That's perfect. Well done. Well done. Matt, thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing such a brilliant, grounded example of the 10-year plan in action, and for your enthusiasm and passion for the work that you and your team. It's great to hear you speak so highly of your team. It is a team sport, this healthcare stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this is a fantastic example of where that really bears fruit. If you're interested in learning about the NHS 10-year plan, just search NHS 10-year plan on gov.uk. And if you'd like to find out more about the physiotherapy service or innovation here at Bradford Teaching Hospitals, just head to our website at bradfordhospitals.nhs.uk. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.